afternoon, America. Welcome to the Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. We are happy to have you on board today. Happy Monday. Aren't Mondays just glorious? Don't you wake up on Monday and say to yourself, yes, it's Monday. Let's get in there. Let's go. I mean, I do, but you know, I like what I do. I enjoy it. And there's a lot to get into today. This is going to be a busy week. Today's going to be a busy day. We've got a history class. We've got to get into history class today. April 8th, there's too much to go over that took place on April 8th. A lot to get into. We're going to have some fun with it. But there's some other things happening in higher education and in public education throughout the country that, well, we just have to cover. I don't know that we're going to have time today. There's stuff happening at Harvard. There's people, professors at Harvard that are taking a stand. And they are calling to abolish mandatory DEI pledges. This is a big deal, something that we've got to get to. There is a professor at Wisconsin who was suspended for criticizing DEI initiative, and a settlement has been reached there. That's a big deal. The University of Texas at Austin has closed its DEI offices. There's things that we have to talk about there. Things afoot, my friends, in higher education that are good news. This is good news. There are people standing up, and there are things we have to report on, things we have to talk about. Because as we shine the light of truth across the educational landscape, we also have to shine the light of hope. There's hopeful things taking place. There's stuff going on in a Seattle public school district that we've got to talk about. Seattle, I don't know what's going on in Seattle. Washington and Oregon and California, I don't know. But there's things that we've got to dive into there. But first, a history class. You know, I think we're going to have to go to several history classes today. Because apparently April 8th was a big deal in history. Matter of fact, history class is so important today. I don't know if I'm going to get to the other big stuff. I just don't know. We'll see. We will see where today takes us. April 8th, 1974. I was but a lad. I was just, I don't know, first grade, kindergarten, maybe. I'm just a kid learning the joys of baseball. And William J. Bennett, in the American Patriots Almanac, discusses something that took place today in 1974. That's a big deal. He says it this way: my motto was always to keep swinging. Whether I was in a slump or feeling badly or having trouble off the field, the only thing to do was to keep swinging. Who's he talking about? He's talking about Hank Aaron. He says that was Henry Aaron's approach to baseball and life, especially in the early 1970s when Hammer and Hank was playing for the Atlanta Braves and getting close to overtaking Babe Ruth as the all-time home run leader. As he grew closer to the record-breaking 715 mark, the hate mail began to arrive. And what should have been the best time of his life turned into an ordeal. Some people couldn't stand the thought of a black man taking Ruth's place as the home run king. There were thousands of malicious letters. "You will be the most hated man in this country," one person wrote. Another person wrote, "You're black, so you have no business being here." Just the hatred and the evil that pours out of people when racism takes over. And there were even death threats. One letter said, "I'd like to kill you. Bang, bang, you're dead. P.S. It might happen." But Bennett notes that Hank Aaron just kept swinging through the ugliness, quietly carrying on the work of Jackie Robinson, who had first broken baseball's color barrier, and taking comfort from the flood of fan mail urging him on. Because while there was evil, and there were definite racists who did not want Hank Aaron to surpass Babe Ruth, more so in abundance, there were people that were like, come on, let's go, Hank Aaron, come on, we're behind you. We support you. Yet there's a group of people in this country that their only focus would be on the evil, and they would point their fingers and say, see, this country's evil. There's evil people out there. See, the country's made up of racists, and they're evil. And there's partial truth in that. There are evil people in this country. There are racists in this country. But more so, there are people that absolutely got behind Hank Aaron and loved what he was doing and supported him and urged him on. The fan mail just, according to Bennett, kept coming in. And today, April 8th, 1974, Henry Aaron stepped up to the plate in Atlanta and hammered number 715 over the left center field wall. As he rounded the bases, millions of Americans cheered. But few realized the extent of the gauntlet he'd run. But his dignity and perseverance were evident. Most Americans were unaware of the death threats. They were unaware of the struggles that he went through. But it was his dignity and his perseverance that were evident. Those were the things that stood out. President Nixon may have said it best, according to Bennett. Quote, when I think of Hank Aaron, I think of power and poise, courage and consistency. But most of all, I think of a true gentleman, an outstanding citizen, on the field and off. Hank Aaron represents America at its very best. And when we focus on the overcoming power of humanity, when we focus on the overcoming power of Americans, Nixon was right. It reveals Americans at their best. This is the thing in history class that needs to be focused on all over the country. Not on the hatred, not on the hate mail, not on the death threats, but on the overcoming power of humanity. On the dignity that Hank Aaron displayed through this entire ordeal, on the perseverance, that the focus needs to be on his perseverance. These are the things that need to be emulated. This, my friends, is why the Hank Aaron story needs to be presented in history class today all over the country from this standpoint, that Hank Aaron overcame, and how did he do it? Let's talk about the qualities that he possessed. Let's not talk about the qualities that the evil people possessed. And they do possess qualities. They're not good qualities, but they possess them. They possess qualities of perseverance, that they persevere through their evil dialogue. But that should not be our focus. Ultimately, their perseverance met to a dastardly end when Hank Aaron slammed 715. He's like, I am not backing down from this. I'm not backing down from this record. And boom, he crushed it. And over the wall it goes. And the majority of the nation rallied behind him, cheering him on in love and support of what he had done, to the extent that on this very same day, a year later in 1975, Frank Robinson of the Cleveland Indians makes his debut as the first black manager of a Major League Baseball team. And here we are. We are a few years removed from the horrific assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. And we have these things taking place that continue to progress the black race over the evil that had held them down for centuries. And it's the perseverance and it's the dignity that we need to focus on. That needs to be the outstanding element, the outstanding effect, the outstanding attribute that will take place in history class all over the country today. However, probably it's not going to happen. If the story is even mentioned in history class, and it probably won't, but if it is mentioned, if it's a DEI run class, or if it's a 1619 project run class, or if it's a Marxist socialist run history class, the emphasis will be on the hate mail. The emphasis will be on the racism. And that is a shame, because that's not what the country is made up of. Yes, it exists. It is here. But it's not what the country is made up of. The country is made up of people who genuinely care about each other. I believe that. I believe it's made up of people who genuinely love each other. Yeah, we have disagreements. Yes, we get angry with each other. But there is a genuine care for our fellow man and or woman, as the case may be. There's a genuine care for fellow humanity. That's what needs to be focused upon. That should be the emphasis. And I hope that it is. Here it is. That's our focus here, because I believe it lifts everybody up when that becomes our focus. I believe in the rising tide lifting all boats mentality. That's what I like to see. All right. So April 8th, 1974 and 1975. A little bit of history there for you. A little bit of baseball history. A little bit of baseball is a great game. It really is. It's hard to watch, especially when your team is not winning. But there were a period of years in 06, 07, 08, 09, 10, where the Tigers were just, Justin Verlander was coming up in his prime. We had Kenny Rogers there for a couple of years. We, you know, Jim Leland had put together a team that went deep into the playoffs for several years, and it was just a joy to watch. It was a blast. Joshua and I, and you know, Cindy, Elizabeth, not so much, but the three of us we'd turn the game on in the summertime, and we would just have it playing. We'd be doing stuff, but we'd have the game in the background. Loved it. Nothing better than coming home on a Sunday afternoon, went to church in the morning, come home on a Sunday afternoon, turn the game on, turn on the Detroit Tigers, and then just fall asleep somewhere in the third or fourth inning. Just fall asleep to Rod Allen and Mario Impemba talking in the background. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. It is a great game, and it's especially great when your team is winning. So, all right, a little bit of history class there, but history class is not over, because we're going to shift gears here for a second. Today, April 8th, 1913. Do you know anything about the year 1913? The year 1913 politically was not a good year. No, not for this country, it wasn't. There were three things that took place really in 1913. That set America on a self-destructive path. Dean, you're being so negative all of a sudden. I know, but it's true. There were two amendments to the Constitution. One of them shares the anniversary today. We had the 16th Amendment, which is horrible. We had the 17th Amendment, which again, in my opinion, was horrible. And we had the creation of the Federal Reserve System, which, again, in my opinion, was horrible. There is so much there, I don't think one history class is enough to cover it. We're going to do our best, though, because today, April 8th, 1913, was the day that the 17th Amendment was ratified. The 17th Amendment required that senators be elected by direct popular vote. Well, Dean, that's a good thing. I mean, that is an example of democracy in action. And that's the problem, kids, because we're not a democracy. And it's a problem when our leaders want to steer us in a direction that is democracy related. All right, so we've got to have a history class here. We've got to dive into the 17th Amendment and maybe even to the 16th Amendment if we have time. It's important. There's things that we have to discuss and talk about why these two amendments were so detrimental to the country. All right, I'm going to pause here. We're going to take a break early so I have enough time in the next segment to just destroy the 17th Amendment. All right, we'll pick it up on the other side. You are listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
You've all heard Dr. McCullough and others share over and over the value of keeping your sinuses cleansed. It's a smart move all year, but even more so when we're cooped up inside. It's not really open for debate any longer. Those that live smart and live well pay attention to nasal and oral hygiene. Cofix RX has just the tools for the job with our nasal and throat cleanse. Click the Cofix RX banner on AmericaOutloud.shop to get 20% off your entire order. That's right, AmericaOutloud.shop. Use coupon code OUTLOUD. That's coupon code OUTLOUD for 20% off your entire order.
Use Cofix RX because it works.
Cholesterol, blood pressure, blood sugar, inflammation, and weight. These are all real-world problems that 87% of Americans are struggling with. Often, there are no symptoms, but left unattended, we become inundated with one health problem after another. It's time to fight back with HealRight. HealRight is a bar that you eat, but it's food as medicine that addresses the nutritional root cause of health issues in just 8 weeks. Developed by world-renowned scientists and backed by 15 years of research, HealRight is effective, but it's also delicious and works without additional diet or lifestyle changes. Step out of the statistics and use food as medicine. Visit HealRight.com/OutLoud or AmericaOutloud.shop and use the code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You are listening to America Out Loud Talk Radio. Of course, you knew that. You can find us here Monday through Friday at the 2 p.m. Eastern time slot. And no matter how you're listening, we are happy that you are. All right, today is history class. You know, from time to time, we have to get into it. It's important. We have to talk about history. Because if we don't, then we're not aware. If we don't talk about why things were the way they were, then we don't know why things are the way they are now. And today's history class is important, the one that we're about to dive into. It was today, 1913, April the 8th, when the 17th Amendment was ratified. Now, Article 1 of our Constitution, Section 3, the very first paragraph says this: "The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, chosen by the legislature thereof for 6 years. Each senator shall have one vote." It was important. Our founding fathers felt it was important that the state legislatures choose the senators. They felt it was important that the states have representation, the state itself as an entity, that the state have representation in our government, in the Senate. 1913 rolls around, and they change this amendment, or this amendment changes not only the structure of how we vote for senators, it changes the structure of the federal government. Oh, it was so surreptitious. The 17th Amendment says this: "The Senate of the United States shall be composed of two senators from each state, elected by the people thereof for 6 years, and each senator shall have one vote." Elected by the people thereof. It was no longer the legislators that voted for their senators. It was now the people at large. Why? Why? Why would they do this to us? All right. In his book, 1913, Oliver DeMille has some interesting comments about this amendment. On page, what is this? Page 42. This is chapter 3. Chapter 3 is entitled World Shifting Event Number 2, the 17th Amendment. He says, many people who read about the 17th Amendment today jump to the conclusion that it actually helped freedom by making senators more responsive to the people. Indeed, the promoters of this amendment in 1913 made the same argument, that it would make America more democratic. The reality is very different than the headline, however. While the direct election of senators may seem more democratic, because it is, at first glance, a deeper analysis shows that it hurt American freedom. That was the point. The point here in 1913, that there were powers at work that wanted to inch America closer to a democracy. We were not intended to be a democracy, and the founding fathers intended that the states should have a voice. Because collectively, if all the states have a voice in the federal government, it keeps the states on more of an equal footing with the federal government itself. This new method of electing senators, however, affected how the senators tended to vote. Before the 17th Amendment, it was mostly the members of the House of Representatives who tended to vote for increased spending programs, since they were elected directly by the people, and since the people often wanted to have increased benefits from the government. It was natural that their interest was in voting for the programs that the people found tempting. By contrast, in the original model, senators tended to vote against increased spending proposals, since they were elected by the state legislatures, which had to foot the bill of increased spending. After the amendment was adopted, however, both representatives of the House and now Senate were direct representatives of the people, and nobody represented the states or the voice of frugality. Both the House and the Senate now tended to vote for the increase. The natural check on spending disappeared. Because, and this is why really we need to have this conversation of the 17th Amendment in conjunction with the 16th Amendment. Because the 16th Amendment gave Congress the power to, here's the verbiage. The Congress shall have power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. This gave Congress the right to tax personal income from any source. Income tax does not have to be in apportionment to the census. Now, prior to this, Congress did not have the authority to levy an income tax. If Congress wanted money, then they had to go to the states in order to request money. And this is where the senators being elected directly by the states was very important, because it maintained some frugality in Congress. There was this financial check and balance between the states and the federal government. The federal government had to come and get money or request money from the states if they wanted a project. And the senators were more likely to, vote against it. The House, if the pet project or the money was for the people, the House would be more inclined to vote for it, because they were elected directly by the people. The senators, not so much. We had more of a balance. But you've got the 16th and 17th Amendment happening in conjunction with each other, where the federal government now has the authority via the 16th Amendment to tax the people directly, and the senators are now voted upon directly by the people, as opposed to the states. And you really have these two houses that are almost doing the same thing. This completely took the states out of the knees. This was the beginning of the federal government rising to a higher status over the states. Before 1913, it was more of an equal footing. It was more of a equal playing field. After 1913, not so much. Oliver DeMille continues here. He says, the framers of the Constitution looked at the major forces of power in society and tried to make sure that the Constitution balanced and checked the powers of each group. They wanted both the wealthy and the poor to have representation, and for neither to gain full control of the federal government. They also wanted the federal and state levels of government to each have different powers and to check and balance each other, so that neither the states nor the federal government could take power over the other. The 17th Amendment disrupted both of these balances and ended both of these checks on too much power. The states lost their control over the Senate, and as a result, the federal government slowly but surely took over many state powers. Today, nearly all Americans see the government in Washington, D.C. as above all the state governments, because this is the reality we live in. But it was not the original intent of the framers. We've lost many freedoms because of this change. Well, it was all in the name of democracy, right? It was all, this is, I don't, quite frankly, I don't understand in 1913 how this ratification got by the states. I don't know what spell they were under, because the states have to ratify the amendment. How in the world would the number of states needed, which I think is it 35? I don't have the Fifth Amendment, the Article 5. And let's go to Article 5, amending the Constitution. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary. Ooh, I'm in studio and Snatch has got a squirrel in her sights. Sometimes Snatch is just going to make a special guest appearance, especially when the squirrels are out. Back to Article 5. Snatch, are you done? Okay, good. Back to Article 5. The Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid to all intents and purposes as part of this Constitution, when ratified by the legislatures of three-fourths of the several states, or by conventions. Okay, this is not the convention process. This is where two-thirds of both houses in Congress, so two-thirds of the House, two-thirds of the Senate, and they're on board with this. And then it requires, it shall be valid on all intents and purposes when ratified by three-fourths of the several states. How in the world in 1913 did three-fourths of our states say, yeah, this is a great idea? Let's forego our power. In both instances, in the 16th and the 17th Amendment, three-fourths of the states agreed and thought it would be a good idea just to hand it over. They handed over to the federal government the ability and the power to tax the individual citizens. So now it took the states out as a checkpoint as a guardrail, a financial guardrail, that's gone. And then the 17th Amendment, I can't believe three-fourths of the state said, yeah, we don't need a voice. The state itself doesn't need a voice. As long as the people have a voice, let's be more democratic. Let's further walk down this road to a democracy. Let's have direct election for the senators. This is an awful idea. It was awful then, and it's awful now. It will continue to be awful. And in my opinion, I think both the 16th and the 17th Amendment need to be repealed. There needs to be a new amendment repealing these amendments, which it's happened before. You know, we've had amendments repealing previous amendments. The amendment on prohibition, was that the 18th Amendment? Is that the 19th? No, the 19th was voting. I don't remember which. I just know that the prohibition amendment, that was repealed. I mean, it's doable. We can absolutely do it. We need to repeal the 16th and the 17th. Authority and power needs to be given back to the states. That's got to happen. It's necessary. DeMille continues here. The founding generation was widely read in the great classics of human history and the greatest political and economic thinkers of all time. They were close students of the government documents of history, and they put the Constitution together carefully and with precise purposes. When we change the Constitution by amending or by legislating, we need to be equally wise. We need to look through every detail and choose accordingly. While the 17th Amendment may appear more democratic to many onlookers, we need a deeper standard of analysis to really understand whether it's good or bad. Before the 17th Amendment, the majority of powerful leaders in American history made their mark and pursued their goals and agendas on the public record, in the Senate, or the White House. Since 1913, such powerful individuals have been more prone to promote their goals and agendas from behind the scenes, influencing or simply purchasing media institutions, academic organizations, lobbying and special interest groups, political parties, and big business. The people have much less control over the actions and influences of men and women in associations, foundations, social marketing campaigns, or corporate and other private arenas of leadership than they did on senators prior to the 17th Amendment. That's an interesting point. It's kind of an oxymoron that, you know, we're gonna publicly elect now all the senators, so the people can have more control. And what's happened is the people have less control. And a lot of it is because of the bureaucratic state that has, I don't want to say it's usurped authority, because it really hasn't. Congress has given away its authority. Congress is like, we don't want this job anymore. You guys do it. We just want to sit here and look good and make the money. In addition to changing how the federal government taxed people in the 16th Amendment, the adoption of the 17th Amendment shifted the focus of the Senate from being the center place of national frugality to becoming another parliamentary assembly bent on increasing taxes and spending more government money. And that's what happened. And how Nelson Aldridge and the gang, you know, these Republicans, these country club good old boy Republicans in 1913, they're the ones who spearheaded this. And they got Wilson on board, President Wilson. They got him on board. But you know what? I don't think they had to really work hard to get Wilson on board. His March 4th inaugural address in 1913 really spoke volumes. At the point at when he gave it, I think few people realized just how far-reaching his words would become. His address was very, you know what? I think we need to revisit it here. I think we need to revisit Wilson's address so you can see exactly almost how prophetic it's become and where we are as a nation because of it. I don't think the Republicans needed to convince Wilson. I think they were probably all in bed together. Even in 1913, we had a blooming uniparty. All right, let's pause here. We'll take a break and we'll pick this up on the other side. You're listening to The Dean's List on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
When God, through his grace and mercy, gave us free will of the people was to live freely. To that end, we fight for the liberty of all at a time when global tyranny threatens us as never before in mankind's history. This vision is manifest at AmericaOutloud.news, a site for all who cherish free will and freedom. Now is our time, my fellow Americans. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Lean, pure, with premium ingredients. Global Healing's pure plant protein offers 20 grams of protein per scoop, and it's a perfect way to maintain and build lean muscle while indulging yourself. It combines enzymes and probiotics to maximize nutrient absorption, improving digestion and your gut health. Available in vanilla and chocolate flavors, elevate your protein consumption while supporting your overall wellness with pure plant protein. Go to AmericaOutloud.shop and get 15% off using the code OUTLOUD. Global Healing, giving you the power to take control of your health naturally.
Maintaining a strong immune system has never been more critical. Nutrition company Healthy Cell created Immune Super Boost to help you strengthen your immunity, unlike other supplements that don't work. Immune Super Boost is not a pill. It's a gel you swallow with ultra absorption of science-backed nutrients proven to support immunity, like vitamin C, D3, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea. Go to HealthyCell.com and use limited time code OUTLOUD for 25% off your first order, risk-free. Love it or your money back, guaranteed. HealthyCell.com, code out loud.
Welcome back to The Dean's List. I'm Dean Bowen. You know, on that break, I had the lemon blueberry Healrite micronutrient bar. I think the lemon blueberry is my favorite. I think I've decided. I just really like the taste of the lemon blueberry. Evidence-based results supports a healthy metabolism, 20 essential vitamins and minerals, 20 plus actually. I was looking back here on the package. It's just loaded. I mean, vitamin B6, vitamin B12, calcium, vitamin K, vitamin E, vitamin D, vitamin C, vitamin A, some vitamins I don't know how to pronounce. For optimal gut performance, it says that right on the package. And that's why I take it, because I want optimal gut performance. I don't know. I've never had anyone ask me how my gut's performing. How is your gut performing? I just want I want my gut to be well. You know, I've told you I've taken a lot of antibiotics, and I want my natural microbiome back. I want my natural bacteria to resurface. I was talking to someone the other day, and she was saying that she just had completed a round of antibiotics, and she tries not to take them. But as just a last resort, she felt like she needed to get over whatever she had. And now she was going to try to replenish her good bacteria. And I said, you know, you need to give Healrite you need to order yourself some Healrite micronutrient bars. Not only are they delicious, but they will help replenish the good bacteria. That's why I take them. That's why I eat them. And I like them though. They're delicious. All right. Back to 1913. Back to history class. Okay, break is over. Let's dive back into history class. 1913. Today is the anniversary, if you're just now joining us. Today is the anniversary of the ratification of the 17th Amendment. And you might think that's a great thing because the 17th Amendment called for the general election of senators. The two senators from each state, initially, the Constitution had them being elected by state legislatures, which had given the states a voice. It was a very important setup. It was an important structure. The 17th Amendment chipped away at the original structure of the Republic. The 16th Amendment chipped away at it in conjunction. 1913 was not a good year, my friends. You had the 16th Amendment giving the federal government the power and the authority to tax the people directly, which was not the case. Previously, the federal government had to go to the states. And then the states decided, okay, if you really need this money. And now the government just takes what they want from people. There's no check against financial corruption. There's no check and balance. And this is why we're in the mess that we're in. This is why we have to have these knockdown dragouts in Congress and when it comes time to refund the government. And they've got to work out these budget deals, and you've got congressmen and senators attaching who knows what to these bills, you know, for their own pet projects. So 1913 destroyed all of that, just destroyed it. The twofold Republic crushing punch was the 16th and the 17th Amendment. So the 17th Amendment took away the voice that the states had, and the 16th Amendment took away the financial check that the states had. And then you get this behemoth in 1913 of the Federal Reserve System, which, you know, there's just not enough time for us to dive into that. But the glue to all of this, really, the glue, the one person that signed off on all of this and made it happen, was President Wilson. And he's elected in 1913. March 4th, he gives an inaugural address. And looking back on it now, it's kind of creepy in a very cryptic way. He starts out by talking about how the entire government is now in the hands of the Democrats. He says there's been a change of government. It began 2 years ago when the House of Representatives became Democratic by a decisive majority. It has now been completed. The Senate, about to assemble, will also be Democratic. The offices of President and Vice President have been put into the hands of Democrats. What does the change mean? Wilson asked. What does it mean? That is the question that is uppermost in our minds today. That is the question I'm going to try to answer in order, if I may, to interpret the occasion. So this is the opening of his inaugural. And he asks the question, what does it mean that Democrats are in power now? What does it mean that we have control? And you have a Republican Senator, Nelson Aldrich, who got behind these amendments, got behind the Federal Reserve, and really ramrodded this through. So ultimately, we had a uniparty, just like we do today. But the Democrats were in the driver's seat here in 1913. And Woodrow Wilson begins his inaugural address by asking this question, what does it mean now that the Democrats are in control? It means much more than the mere success of a party, he said. The success of a party means little except when the nation is using that party for a large and definite purpose. And Wilson was definitely using the success of the Democrats for a large and definite purpose. It was a reshaping. That was his purpose. No one can mistake the purpose for which the nation now seeks to use the Democratic Party. It seeks to use it to interpret a change in its own plans and point of view. Some old things with which we had grown familiar and which had begun to creep into the very habit of our thought and of our lives have altered their aspect as we have latterly looked critically upon them with fresh awakened eyes, have dropped their disguises and shown themselves alien and sinister. I wonder what he's talking about here. What old things which we had grown familiar and which had begun to creep into the very habit of our thought and our lives? What's the old that he's speaking about here? He doesn't say. He doesn't tell us. But there was some old tradition that the country looked to. There was some old tradition that the country depended upon. And Wilson refers to that as alien and sinister. He says our eyes have become opened. We've looked critically upon them with fresh awakened eyes. And they've dropped their disguises and shown themselves alien and sinister. I wonder what Wilson deemed to be alien and sinister. What old traditions had woven themselves into the fabric of the American thought, the American psyche, American society? Is he talking about Christianity? Is he talking about biblical values? Is he talking about morality? He doesn't say. He doesn't tell us. I'm just asking this question. He continues and says, some new things, as we look frankly upon them, willing to comprehend their real character, have come to assume the aspect of things long believed in and familiar. Stuff of our own convictions. We have been refreshed by a new insight into our own life. Some new things, he says, have come along. Not the old, but new. And as we look frankly upon them, he says, and as we're willing to comprehend their character, he says, they've come to assume the aspect of things long believed and familiar. These new things, if we look at them long enough, and they kind of look like the old. They kind of take on aspects of things long believed, things that are familiar. Stuff of our own convictions. They're not these things, though. He's very clear about it. They're not these things. But they've kind of taken on the aspect of these things, kind of the way that the old used to feel. It sounds to me, again, he doesn't tell us what the new things are. It sounds to me like Woodrow Wilson is ushering out the old stable, the old familiar, the old guard, the old consistent foundations. And he's replacing them with something new that kind of looks like the old, but it's not exactly the old. It's the new formula for Coca-Cola. It's not the Coca-Cola classic that we've come to know and love. It's a new formula. He talks about the next paragraph. He says, we see that in many things, life is very great. And he talks about how great American life is and how it has been. But then in the next paragraph, he begins it with, but the evil has come with the good. And then he talks about, you know, how much fine gold has been corroded. And he talks about all the bad that has come into the American fabric. Oh, there's some good, but there's a lot of bad. Evil has come with the good. And he begins to talk about how we purge the evil but keep the good. He says, at last, a vision has been vouchsafed us of our life as a whole. We see the bad with the good, the debased and decadent with the sound and vital. With the vision, we approach new affairs. Our duty is to cleanse, to reconsider, to restore, to correct the evil without impairing the good. To purify and humanize every process of our common life without weakening or sentimentalizing it. He is describing here how now that the Democrats are in control, they can purge the evil. And then they can refine what's left. It's the duty here, he says, of the Democrats to cleanse, to reconsider, to restore, to correct the evil without impairing the good. He says there has been something crude and heartless and unfeeling in our haste to succeed and be great. Our thought has been, let every man look out for himself. Let every generation look out for itself. While we reared giant machinery, which made it impossible that any but those who stood at the levers of control should have a chance to look out for themselves. He's talking about the American ingenuity of individualism. And he says, that's been our thought. Let every man look out for himself. Let every man in his ingenuity make his own way. And then, you know, let every generation look out for themselves. Every generation, with their ingenuity, make their own way. But he's saying, well, we missed it. Because while we reared giant machinery, which made it impossible that any but those who stood at the levers of control should have a chance to look out for themselves. He's saying, we've made it impossible for Americans to look out after themselves. Only those that run big business have that ability. And then he proceeds to say, it's now the job of government to look out after everybody. This, my friends, was the beginning of a, personally, what I would say is was the beginning of a socialist revolution in the country at the hands of Woodrow Wilson, who was all on board and signed off on the 16th and the 17th Amendments, who was all on board for the Federal Reserve System. And now he's talking about how we had forgotten our morals, and now it's the job of the government to look out for people. He says, we have come now to the sober second thought. The scales of heedlessness have fallen from our eyes. We've made up our minds to square every process of our national life again with the standards we so proudly set up at the beginning and have always carried at our hearts. Our work is a work of restoration. And then he goes on to talk about the things that he's going to restore. He talks about tariffs. He talks about a banking and currency system. He talks about the industrial system. He talks about agriculture. He talks about forests, waterways, and how all of this is going to be corrected. He says, nor have we studied and perfected the means by which government may be put at the service of humanity in safeguarding the health of the nation, the health of its men and its women and its children, as well as their right in the struggle for existence. So he's talking about government. Government needs to come alongside and take care of you. Government, we haven't studied this, but we're studying it now. Now that the Democrats are in charge, we are going to study how government may be of service in safeguarding the health of the nation and safeguarding the health of its men and women and children, as well as their rights in the struggle for existence. This is no sentimental duty, he says. The firm basis of government is justice, not pity. These are matters of justice. There can be, and this is important right here, what he says, there can be no equality or opportunity. What does that sound like? There can be no equality or opportunity, the first essential of justice in the body politic, if men and women and children be not shielded in their lives. in their vitality from the consequences of great industrial and social processes, which they cannot alter, control, or singly cope with. He's saying there is no equality here. There's no opportunity in this country if men and women are not shielded, if the government is not shielding them, if the government is not protecting them, not protecting their lives and their vitality from the consequences of the evil industrial process, the evil industrial and social process. And then he says, these are some of the things we ought to do and not leave the others undone. The old-fashioned, never-to-be-neglected, fundamental safeguarding of property and individual rights. So he's combining these new thoughts and these new quote-unquote rights that the government needs to protect literally and shield literally the citizens and come alongside them and show them how to live and how to be healthy and how to whatever, fill in the blank. And he's saying, you know, these are the new things. These are the new things we want to do. He says, these are some of the things we ought to do and not leave the other undone, the old-fashioned, never-to-be-neglected, fundamental safeguarding of property and individual rights. So he's combining the rights and the declaration, the inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, owning property, with now the right of having a government look out after you, be your big brother. This was his inaugural address. I mean, there's just too much to get into. It's not very long. I mean, that's pretty much close to the end. But this, my friend, was the beginning. This was the start. And then you have these two amendments, the 16th and 17th, where the states really lose all power. I shouldn't say all power. The states really lost an equal footing. And the Republic took a hit. Our Republic took a punch to the throat. And so here we are. Today is the anniversary of the ratification of the 17th Amendment. I don't know how they got it past the states. I really don't. I don't know how 3/4 of the states were duped into signing off on completely exchanging their rights and their authority and power. All right, so we had a history class today, but that's it. We are fresh out of time. Oh, I love history class so much. I wish we had more time. I wish we had 3 hours just to dive into history. But alas, we do not. That's all the time we have for today, America. Thank you for joining me. Encourage your friends and family to get on the Dean's List. Share this show, because we must unite to renovate the age.